You got to know where this guy at all times. There he is again.
How about three in a row?
Going to it. That was cold blooded.
Another three.
No!
Can't even hold you. He may look like a sick nigga, don't he? He may look sick. It's in his posture, right? It's in his eyes and his posture. I don't like the way he stand on them sidelines. Yeah, man. Training camp has opened up and the Warriors play in, is it Tokyo on Friday? Wizards over it? So it's the offseason's is just about over here as we roll into this 22-23 season just with the scandals everywhere, man. Ime Udoka, you have heard by now, was clapping the wrong cheeks, apparently. And no one really knows. They're being very vague about who it is and what this is. And, you know, there's all these rumors. I didn't really like Stephen A. and ESPN trying to make this a racist thing right away. Like, hold on. Let's wait and see what he did. And it seems, again, reading between the lines, and you know, no one really knows what's going to eventually come out here. You saw Matt Barnes retract his statement. He was like, yo, this is wrong. And then he comes out, you know, 24 hours later, he's like, yo, someone told me what Ime did. I can't stand by that. Like, nah. So what it looks like to me is the reason they didn't fire him is because they don't want to pay him. They're going to let it play out long and hopefully he resigns, or that's what they're hoping for. And so then they don't know how to pay him. It's about money. He ain't going to be coaching. It looks like he's going to get the Mark Jackson shadow ban from the league for whatever he did. But, you know, speculating it was the VP's wife or some sort of scandalous thing. And for Boston, obviously, it's not going to help their situation with an interim coach. And you already have, remember, not only did they lose Gallinari, they brought in Brogdon, right, who we'll see if he stays healthy. But remember the KD thing when they were like, yeah, we'll give you Jaylen Brown. We'll trade you Jaylen Brown for him. And then Jaylen Brown got on Twitter and was like, man, I can't believe these disloyal motherfuckers, basically. Right. And so you already know there's a weird power dynamic and there's weird relationships amongst the team. Smart, the alpha, but Tatum, you know, there's all this stuff. And now Ime is out of the mix, who was the guy that seemed to kind of control all that, or at least bring it in and bring it together last season. So the Celtics, there's no way to spin this positively or say they're going to be the same. I don't think they can be. Maybe if Brogdon has a healthy year, they can be better. Or I don't know. Jaylen Brown works on his ball handling or something. Maybe their route to being better and overcoming this adversity is through their players becoming better this year, because that's not impossible with given how young the roster is and some of the moves they made. The other scandal around the league was the Robert Sarver thing finally coming to a tipping point, which this happened last offseason, right? The investigation, and it played out over the year, and they first suspended him for the year, but now he's selling the team, right? The pressure from the other owners and the other guys in the ownership group. So he's going to sell the Mercury and the Suns. And you heard Chris Paul speak about it. Yesterday, Steph said he had called Adam Silver. And Adam Silver was initially catching a lot of flack. But the reality is, and you've heard other people say it, right? Like, what he works for them dudes. What is it? There is a point where it's like, what can he do? It looks like it's going to work out. And, you know, look, I'm not even going to front. Sarver sounds kind of hilarious. I mean, maybe you're going to frown on me for saying this. Now, I think it's important, the tone. I don't know the tone. People were saying, you know, like, he sounds like an old rich dude who just kind of like has no filter and just like kind of wiles out. And I don't know the tone of some of these things, but it sounds kind of funny. Now, should he be owning an NBA team and doing this stuff? No, it's a bad look. You got to get him out of there. But I'm not going to sit here and act like I was super offended by some of these stories. I kind of giggled. There was one trade as the Utah Jazz continue to tear it down and unload the pieces from the former regime. So they send Bogdanovich to the Pistons. He was linked to the Lakers. The Lakers were trying to get Bogdanovich, I believe, and Clarkson, but they're not trying to come up off their draft picks. It's interesting. I will say, the Lakers, they do draft pretty well. If you've looked at their later picks, they've done pretty well in the draft, so I can understand why they value them. But Bogdanovich goes to Detroit for Kelly Olynyk and some young cat that I've never heard of. Now, honestly, Olynyk, he might be the better player when you talk about he and Bogdanovich, but he's just not durable, right? He's always hurt. But you know me, I'm an Olynyk guy. He's low-key dirty. He rebounds. He does the dirty things. He's a much better passer than you'd think. And he shoots the three. Granted, not as good as Bogdanovich, but you understand what Detroit's doing on paper, right? They are buying space for Ivy and Cade with a veteran shooter in Bogdanovich. And so on paper, they look good, man. They're not ready to win, but they're ready to compete and grow. And so I think they're one of those league pass teams that everybody has an eye on because of all the young talent. And I'm curious to see the Jaden Ivey, Cade Cunningham dynamic in the split of on-ball duties. Because, you know, Ivy, in his brief appearance in Summer League, he looked pretty good, man. But are they going to do 50-50? What's it going to be? Because, you know, I was thinking about it. In an ideal world, if Ivy became like the dominant on-ball guy, that would mean that they've become really good, right? Because you would say, okay, Ivy is good enough to be that. And then his athleticism and pop to touch the paint allows Cade to be that secondary guy. I don't know. I don't know about all that. That would be a dream scenario. But I imagine Cade will have the ball in his hands most of the time, and you let Ivy be the secondary attacker, where he can just rip through and explode kind of in a straight line, play to his strengths. But you look at Sadiq Bey, who is a prolific 3-point shooter. You add Bogdanovich, and then you got the young center from Memphis in there. So Detroit, I have my eye on them early in the season, and I'm sure I'll cover them in some pods and stuff like that. In Warrior news, Andre Iguodala has returned. Announced it on Point Forward. Look, I'm not hating. I like the podcast. I like it better than Draymond's. He and ET have good chemistry, and you know, they touch on different. It's a good podcast, right? I do think that the podcast had a lot to do with this decision. Just you hear about how Marcus Thompson and people close to the team talk about him, who kind of know him and have got to know him, and how he's such a businessman and he's just makes shrewd moves and all this. I think he knows one more year trying to go back to back with the most famous team in basketball right now, what that would do to his audience or for his audience of this podcast that he's trying to grow. Now, all of that being said, I'm still with the move. I still like it because, again, of his value. Just for Kuminga alone, and you heard Steph, again, this was the story last year where they were both, he and Andre were both very definitive or kind of demonstrative in the suggestion that he's kind of an assistant coach, that he's in the Udonis Haslam role, right? He's not really there to play ball. And so we'll see. We'll see how his body holds up. But again, I'm not expecting him to be a contributing member of the rotation as the season goes on. I'm there. I expect him to be the mentor for Moody, Kuminga, and these young guys, and he's worth his weight in gold in that role. So if it pops his podcast off at the same time, then so be it. Two birds, one stone. Welcome back, Ig. And then the other news for the Warriors that is very, very exciting is all the young guys are a go. Ryan Rollins, Patrick Baldwin Jr., Wiseman's been healthy through the summer. And so now all of a sudden this preseason becomes fun, man. So Mac McClung is fighting for one of those spots. There's one spot left, right? But, you know, usually a championship team's preseason is just kind of like get these guys a little bit of run and get them off the floor, right? There's not much intrigue. But now our first look at Rollins and Baldwin Jr., all of these preseason games are going to be intriguing. You know I'm going to cover it on the Patreon. You already know about that, right? So that's exciting that they're all healthy. Steph, it was reported, is signing is it a done deal or not? The rumor is he's going to sign a lifetime deal with Under Armour for a Billy. What's Doja say? Player, I get it. But damn, you would... You know, I guess it the style just doesn't matter to him as much as others. It was an unrealistic hope of mine, but I was kind of low-key hoping that he'd move off of Under Armour so I could rock more of his gear because, well, I don't need to get into the shoe shit. It was funny, if you guys watched the compilation, did I put it in there? I don't know. But in that year one of me doing this, 2016, I was shitting on the Currys. So, yeah. But then what I wanted to say about Steph was, so you saw him at the Canelo fight. Was that in the Bay Area? I don't know. Steph was there. And you saw Canelo, you know, giving him love. And once again, it reaffirms to me, I've spoken on this before, how the foreign athletes, they recognize Steph as a GOAT. Canelo, Messi, some of these famous soccer players, these worldwide athlete guys, they recognize Steph as a GOAT. And then you heard Giannis do the same, talking about he's the best player. Humble Steph's like, I thought the same thing about him, right? But I guess what it speaks to is I think there's an underlining still with America, Americans' culture. And you can shift it into any walk of life, but in sports, right? And I'm guilty of it myself, too. We just think bigger is better, right? We want bigger, faster, stronger. That's the American way. You know, when you can go in football, too, right? Like Josh Allen, right? It's just like, oh, that's a quarterback right there. Big, fast, strong. Can threw that shit in the dirt yesterday. But anyway, my point is I think when you go more globally, they're like, no, it's clear. Steph's the best. Like, what do you mean? Like, they don't have that same mindset. It's more skill-based. They appreciate the art, the skill of whatever the person's doing more so than this bigger, faster, stronger thing. And so you saw Steph getting love from everybody, as he should. Other little interesting tidbit. No one said a whole lot in this opening, you know, team photo, media day thing. I think the one thing of note was that Draymond said he doesn't expect to get an extension done. And so he's just going to focus on being the best version of himself or being the best player that he can be. I love it. If we just get a chip on the shoulder contract year Draymond out to prove it, and he just closes his mouth and just gets a second wind here in his career, like that, that's the ideal situation. And that's how you really like, oh, Draymond, if you gotta walk it how you talk it. And you've heard him talk about the business of the game. And obviously he's a clutch client in his podcast career and all these different avenues. And he's been very successful in, right? So if you're a businessman, you can't take it personal that the Warriors are like, look, bro, play it out. Like, show us and we'll give it to you. We'll give you, you have another big year. You show that you've still got enough left in the tank. We'll give it to you, but play it out. It's a business move. And I think he should have to understand that. You listen to the Athletic boys. They feel like Poole might be the one that gets the extension. Because if they can get him at a reasonable number, it may turn into a bargain. I also think it makes sense because as mature as Poole is as a young player, his character, there is a world where halfway through the year, he's pressing. I brought it up, I think, in the DiVincenzo breakdown I did a few weeks ago. Let's just say he has a shooting slump to start the year. And then Moody's playing really well. DiVincenzo's playing really well. Hell, this Ryan Rollins kid starts getting a few minutes, right? And so Poole's minutes are down. His percentages are down. It's only natural. He's chasing the, like, he's to start to press, right? And so you'd get that out of the way. If he gets his bag now, then it's like, hey, man, just focus on winning, getting stronger, playing defense, you know, rounding out your game. You don't have to worry about your numbers as much. Right. And so I think that that's positive. And then the other thing with Poole is because he's such a student of the game and such a gym rat, you don't worry about paying a guy like that. I got no problem if he's the one that gets the extension. We'll see. Someone added me on Twitter and there's this viral clip of these like 7 and 8 year olds playing club basketball and they're talking shit, telling me you're too small. You suck. You're soft. Doing all these gestures and stuff, man. And I saw another clip of something, you know, pointing, running out of there. Just wild, showboaty, weird stuff. And that's just a symptom of the times of Instagram. Because, hey, the clip went viral, right? What they set out to do succeeded. So there is incentive to act this way. I also think some of this stuff is because these kids have never been popped in the mouth. Right. And I'm not even talking about from their parents. Like, I'm just thinking in far different times. Right. We're talking about the 90s here, you know, but between, I would say, like 8 and 12. I probably had 50 tussles. Not fights, tussles. Right. Like shoves, slaps, tosses. Maybe a punch was thrown here and there. Right. But kid shit. No one was getting hurt. You're like 8 years old. Right. But, you know, between 7 and 12, whatever. You used to get in tussles. It was like, oh, you like someone just called me a, you know, what? Like, what? You don't say that shit to me. And so Maybe it's for the better that that type of physical altercations doesn't happen with kids these days and it's accepted. But I think it's also a slippery slope of it's just becoming, I don't even want to call it style, but for a lack of a better term, more style than substance. I think that the youth coaches and these club organizations, they've got to be careful with where it's going with all this weird showboating non-basketball shit. But that was my take on it because my guy had added me, Aaron, I believe, on Twitter. And yeah, and I know why you added me because you knew I was shaking my head about it, right? I got two mailbag questions here.
Do you think that Mobley is the same type of player as Wiseman? Other than the timing that Mobley has, they both really don't like to bump or bully bigs. They're more of a, you know, when they feel contact, they turn, or they like to just take that little midi or the little push shot. And obviously Mobley's defending is way of a higher caliber than Wiseman. But I was just thinking if Wise could just give what Mobley did for vertical spacing and to open the floor, then you have Steph and Clay and Jordan or Wiggs. It's like, I don't know what teams will do with our squad. You know what I mean? Like, I was just thinking about that. Like, damn, even if we just get that part and you know, six fouls, it could be scary. Yeah, I just wanted to see what you thought about that. All right. Love.
I like how Kyle was thinking about that at the end and kind of like blew his mind. He was like, shh, it could be, right? It could be. No, I don't see Mobley and Wiseman as the same type of player, though. And there are some parallels, right? I think, you know, so Mobley has his older brother who, did he come out of the draft? It's kind of wild. Is he not in the league? He's a 7-footer, too, and he's agile. He's got a, I don't know where he's at. He was at USC as well. I assume he got drafted. Maybe he's overseas. But his dad was his coach, and he had an older brother. So Evan Mobley has, if I were to venture to guess, has probably played 5 times more basketball than James Wiseman. Way more, right? And so that's where some of that instinct and feel comes. And then the question is, like, can you play catch up with that? Is that has to kind of be molded early on, right? And I'm assuming Mobley looks to me like someone who's dribbling a basketball when he was 5. He was out there playing, right? And then he had his older brother to play against. So, you know, because part of Wiseman's issue is who does he go in a gym and play, you know, 2v2 with when he's like 6'10 and he's like 15? Ain't nobody trying to do that, right? But Mobley had his older brother to go against and sharpen him too. So it's a different situation, much more advantageous for him. Where was I going with this? So, like, listen, Wiseman, did you hear Bob Myers? He praised Wiseman for playing in all the pickup games this offseason in San Francisco. Very underwhelming. Like, oh, cool. You played in all the pickup games. Like, you should, right? But big picture, I think what it represents is important because it appears Wiseman does really like to hoop. I'm not going to say he loves it, but it looks like he likes to. I don't know. I'd heard some reports that people were worried. I don't know. That was some boat. I don't know. But from what all I can do is go based off what I've seen. For all my criticism of his game early on and how raw he is, he does seem to like to be out there, right? Like, he does want the ball. He does get excited, and he does seem like he wants to play. And for a kid that size with those physical attributes, that's a really big deal. We're not talking about Weatherspoon here where it's like, oh, you love to play? You like to, who cares? You're 6'3", bro. All guys 6'3 love to play. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's a big deal for a 7-footer to want to play every day and do that. And so maybe his love of the game and his work ethic can help him take a big leap and grow with this feel and instinct issue. So if we can see him play 70 games this year, I'm not talking heavy minutes, but just a nice, consistent, healthy season, and we can see where he grows and kind of get a better grasp of things, I think we'll all have a much better grasp of what his ceiling is. It's just so hard to gauge. Right now, I've said before, I think it's much higher on the offensive end, where I actually think Mobley's ceiling is clearly higher defensively. I don't think he has a scoring mentality. Wiseman wants to score. Like, Wiseman wants the ball, right? But then the thing is, you listen to Kerr talk, and they're like, we've made it clear to James, his job is to rebound, defend, and shut the fuck up. I added that last part, but more or less, right? And they talk about the Looney duo and all that stuff. So it's interesting because they're kind of trying to mold him against what his instincts are. And so we'll see how that plays out, but I'm excited. I'm not going to be too harsh. Again, let's just see the growth. Let's see 20 games. That's how I usually break it down into quadrants of the season in growth. But no, I mean, I rambled on about the actual question. If you put Mobley's feeling instincts into Wiseman's body, yeah, that'd be crazy. I got one more.
What's up, Alk? I'm about to write an article power ranking all the teams in the two conferences. So I was wondering if I could maybe get your perspective on what the top 8 to 10 teams are going to be. Love the work, man. And I really appreciate all the content you're doing, even though it's the offseason.
My bad. I didn't get to this obviously last week. And so the question is, you've probably completed your article, but I'll give you my quick preseason power rankings. I think you got to go Warriors as the champs. And I can't say we've returned everybody, but I think we've filled the roster. Looks nice. You know, like there's an argument to be made that the Warriors will be better this year, right? When you look at the growth of the young guys, if they take a step and just different reasons, Clay, you know, there's different reasons. So you got to put the champs number one, at least right now, right? Number two, I'll go the Bucks, because a lot of people assume that would have been the finals matchup had Chris Middleton not gone down against Boston. Did he go down in the previous series? I think it was in the round one, right? Either way, they weren't healthy, right? But I think that Giannis is continuing to grow, not necessarily so much like in his skill set, but I think just mentally as a leader and understanding, you know, how to lead and how to win. And so I think he's just going to continue to mature and get better in that way. And they've basically returned the same squad. So I'll put Milwaukee 2. Number 3, I'm going to go the Clippers. I've spoken about potentially how dangerous they could be. Wall looks really good. Just the depth, the veteran, you know, they're due for a little bit of good luck. Now, I will say this. Have you seen, everybody's probably seen these pictures of Kawhi looking super hulked up, right? He looks like he's put on 10, 15 pounds of muscle. He looks really big. And then, was it last week they announced, oh, by the way, Kawhi is cleared for 5-on-5 basketball. It's like, oh, now? What are we, 15 months off of his ACL? Like, that's extra long. Like, that's a long time. Now he's just being cleared? And so I'm just kind of curious to see what Kawhi is now, because you don't usually see guys come off an ACL and put on 15 pounds. And it looks like good muscle, but again, it's muscle, it's weight. So I don't know. It'll be very interesting. Is he just a power forward now? But again, I think the Clippers right now, this is preseason. I got them 3. 4, I guess I'll go Celtics, but you know, looking at what's happened with the turmoil, I'm liable to knock them back, but I guess I'll give them 4 because of the Brogdon addition and the idea that Tatum and Brown continue, they roll in confidence with what they did last year. They're hungry to get back and all that. 5, I'm going to go the Denver Nuggets. I'm going to go Denver. You got Jamal Murray back, who, by the way, I was looking at his media picture. You know me, I'm a body guy, pause. But, you know, I'll size guys up training in the gym. And you look at this, his physique doesn't look. Talking about Kawhi, you want to talk about the other end of the spectrum? He looks like he hasn't touched a weight since he's been out a year, right? And so, but Murray's back, and he was plenty strong and big enough anyway. I don't think that was an issue for him. You assume Michael Porter Jr. is going to be back, but again, this is a precarious situation with his health. But I do really like the moves they made. Bringing in KCP, perfect match for Jokic, cutting out of those corners. Bruce Brown as well. So I got the Nuggets 4. Next, I got the Sixers. I think they put the right type of players around the two stars. And then, dare I say it, I feel like Harden has an I'm not done yet season in him, right? I think he looks like he's in pretty good shape. And he's hurt, you know, he's kind of humiliated himself with these moves from Houston to Brooklyn now to there. And like all this pressure, Philly ain't going to let him breathe, right? So I think there's some pressure on Harden. And I think that he has at least one more season of like, I'm not completely cooked yet. So I got them at 5-6. I've got the Grizzlies. Honestly, I'd put them higher if it weren't for the fact that Jaren Jackson Jr. went down again. What was the injury? I got to look. Let me look that up here because, a stress fracture in the foot. Yeah, that on a footer. That's spooky. That's spooky business right there for Memphis. That's spooky business. And he's the X factor for them. He's what really puts them over the top. Then I got the Suns, which are seventh here on my top 10. And, you know, look, Chris Paul ain't getting any better, right? He ain't getting any younger. You hear Crowder, he's fallen out of favor there. I don't know what that's about. It's not the first time, I think, that he's gotten salty with the franchise he was playing for. And you assume they kind of want to hand Crowder's role to Cam Johnson anyway, right? And then Ayton. Is Ayton going to be on the trade block? You know, like they obviously, we know how they couldn't move him. He's back. They signed him and all this. They matched, right? It was Indiana that signed him to the offer sheet. And so, like, are they just going to try to move him at the All-Star break? Is he salty, right? There's just a lot of questions on top of the sell of the team and all that shit. So I got them 7. Yeah, I guess that's 8th. Excuse my list here. 9th, I will go Brooklyn. And I'll just simply say we know it's not going to go as planned, you know? Talent-wise, yeah, they're probably top 5, but I don't have to. It's self-explanatory, right? And then 10th, I will go the Heat. Lowry's older. Jimmy took years off his life in that Celtics series, and now he showed up with, you know, extensions in his head. So, you know, Miami always tends to overachieve, so I'm not going to leave him out of the top 10, but I don't see how they're better. Bam's, and maybe if Bam has a redemption year. Bam was Bammer last year. Like they need to acknowledge that. Pat Riley shot him bail. They seem extra hard on Tyler Hero, probably because of his personality and some of the off-court shit. They need to go on it. He needs to go in on Bam because Bam was the disappointment last year. But that's my top 10. It took me some time here to even want to talk about this Trey Lance Niners thing, but I'm going to do it now after it's been a week. You know, I was just super pissed, man. I was super pissed. And you guys know that I wasn't like some Trey Lance fanatic. I wasn't like, oh, Trey Lance is the truth. Like, I can't wait. But I was just so excited to move on from Jimmy and see what he possibly could be. And now, you know, there's a real chance that Lance just never really gets another chance to be a starting quarterback. He was already behind the eight ball because he's not a thrower of the football and mechanically. And now you have like a catastrophic injury to the ankle. And so there's just a chance that he can't recover from this. Because again, it wasn't like he was some technician, you know, some thrower of the football who could just stand still and rely on his mechanics to throw the football. And so if you're Trey Lance, what you have to do, you have to take this as an opportunity, a blessing in disguise. Because a lot of the time, listen, when you get hurt and you're rehabbing it, all of a sudden you have to slow down and like kind of relearn your mechanics and your fundamentals. Break every movement down into pieces, right? Because you're rehabbing and you can't go full speed, right? And so a lot of the times you'll see a guy come back more fundamentally sound from an injury because, again, they had to slow down and examine their mechanics. And so that's what Trey Lance has to do. He has to become obsessed with the precision of his mechanics. Take this time to retweak them. Because he didn't look, man, listen, coaching, you know, obviously it's a junior level and all this, like flag football, basketball, this stuff, right? But you see kids, I've seen this so many times where I'll see a kid do something and you're like, oh, that's probably not for them. Like, that's not safe. He's not doing that well, right? He's not falling well, right? He's not doing that. And in the brief time we saw Trey Lance, what was the one thing everybody said? Everybody was like, damn, he takes too many hits. Like, he doesn't really know how to get hit yet. And so when you take that information and put that into the context of running him between the tackles, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm done with Kyle. And then you see what happened last night in Denver. I'm not going to lie, man. I was kind of grinning just because it's just, I'm ready for the Kyle Shanahan era to end. I really am. This is a very controversial subject, and the lines have been drawn with the fan base. But the reality is, if you look at Kyle Shanahan's tenure with the Niners, the defense has carried him every season. And that was Robert Saleh, and now it's DeMeco Ryans. And what I see is a dude that's just a control freak. He wants to be the star. He doesn't want a quarterback that'll get the credit. You look at who he passed on. He passed on Mahomes. He passed on Watson. He passed on Allen. And he passed on Tom Brady, if you believe the reports that he was wanting to come to the Niners. And then he takes what many consider one of the biggest projects at the quarterback position we've seen in this decade with all our draft capital. Why would he do that? Why? Because then he would get all the credit. Be like, look what Kyle created. I don't know, man. And you listen to like Middlecoff and some of these Niner podcasters and guys around the team. And when Trey got hurt, you could tell Middlecoff in particular, he had been kind of like biting his tongue, right? Like, you could tell he didn't think Trey was it good or good enough or shouldn't have been there, but he was biting his tongue because he covers the Niners, and what was he going to do, just shit on him all the time? He was going to give him a chance, right? But then once he got hurt, he was like, yeah, dude, the kid was bad. Like, he was bad. Okay, fine. So if we want to get to the root of this, how do you draft a kid who can't throw? What are the two easiest, if you look at football and basketball, what are the two easiest skills to identify? The two skills that even just a casual fan, a soccer mom, your grandma, you could turn on a game and they could identify two skills. Shooting. Oh, that guy can shoot. And throwing. You see it at fucking 10 years old in Little League. The kids that can pitch and the kids that can't. Like, you I just don't understand. I don't understand, man. So if you want to get to the root of it, but ugly loss in Denver where the defense did all they could do. And the genius, the time, the clock is ticking on that guy. And I'm here for it, frankly. I'm ready for Warrior shit. We play Friday and Saturday, preseason basketball, man. And we're going to get a look at some of these kids we haven't seen, these two rookies. So I'm excited for that. If you haven't seen that's what I wanted to talk about. I put out this compilation year one of my roasts and punchlines. And I had a couple observations going back through that year. One, Steph struggled. Steph, that, you know, you say, oh, he's self, like, he struggled to integrate KD. And he if you go back and look, he did, right? KD, his defense was amazing year one. I mean, he had games 4-5 blocks. But I think the narrative of him joining the team kind of overshadowed how good he was defensively. And then you look at when Zaza fell on his knee in D.C., in March or whenever that was, towards the end of the year. It's just one of those butterfly effect injuries where if it was a season-ending injury, that could have drastically changed the history of the NBA. Let's say we can't pull it off without him, right? LeBron wins a second championship with the Cavs. Now does Kyrie go to Boston? Does KD, just all these alternate universe things happen with that knee and him able to come back. But I was just taken aback by how many injuries we had to deal with that year, because you remember it as this dominant, dominant season, but they were very close to just being super injured. Draymond had a shoulder and an ankle. David West's thumb. Steph, it's always the ankles, right? KD's knee. Man. It was a little more precarious than I thought. Not like we cleaned house, we won the games, but the injuries, the health situation was much more precarious than I remember it being. But I think the hardest thing about going back and watching those clips was hearing myself call Patrick McCall P-Mac the entire season. And he played a lot, man. Like, if you were to watch that rookie campaign, if you would go back and watch those PMAC, you would think he would be like a low-key star right now, like a third-guard star somewhere, man. Talk about how things plan out, right? Anyway, I'm going to wrap this one up. This is High Volume Shooting. I'm out, y'all.